Hey, this is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week, I'm joined by Brute athlete George Sanchez. George has one of the most inspiring stories of any athlete that we've ever coached, because he wasn't some freak athlete that just immediately found success in the sport. He was just an average Joe, and he had this vision of making it to the games, and he just made it happen. No opportunity fell in his lap. He wasn't just genetically gifted. He decided that making it to the games was his goal, and he did everything in his power to make that happen. When I met him, the year that I met him, he got 81st in his region in the Open. 2 years later, he places 21st at the games. So in this show, we go into detail about certain experiences and lessons he's learned along the way. We talk a lot about mindset, as well as how he uses the concept of how you do anything is how you do everything in everyday life. George is a very, very thoughtful athlete, and I know you will gain a lot from this podcast. Enjoy the show. Hey, this is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. I'm here with my boy, George Sanchez. George, I'm really excited to do this with you, man. It's been a long time coming.
I'm very excited too. This is kind of new for me, so hopefully I don't trip over too much.
You'll kill it, man. So let's start out here. So the reason we're doing this is because I find your story to be incredibly inspiring. It's not like you were some freakishly gifted athlete that just stepped into the sport and had immediate success. You worked your ass off for years to get where you are today. And I think that's, it's really inspiring for someone like me and for anyone that considers themselves, you know, like an average Joe. It makes it possible for them to reach any goal that they want, right? You decided that you wanted to be a CrossFit Games athlete, and you made that happen. It never fell in your lap. The opportunity didn't just come to you. You made that opportunity for yourself. In 2014, I think you were 309th. Next year, you were 271. The next year, you were 81st. And I'm talking about in the Open for those listening. Right. So 2015, you were 81st in your region. The very next year, you had gotten yourself into the top 20. You were 17th, and that was when we had the super region thing, and you decided to go team. This was last year, and then, or this was 2 years ago. And then last year, you got 14th in the Open, and then made it to regionals, made it to the games your first year ever, and got 21st. And so I want to talk about all of that progression, but to start the whole thing out, I kind of want to start in the middle, because I think it's one of the most exciting things that's happened in the past year of the sport. So you went into regionals saying, like, you were calling your shot. You said, I'm going to win the second, fourth, and sixth events. Do you remember having that conversation with me?
Yeah, I remember talking to you about it briefly and Nick. And I was actually kind of amazed that I said those things and you guys were like, oh yeah, they're yours, crush it. You know? And I was like, I had felt so confident that those were mine and those were built for me to win. Mm-hmm. And then whenever like the response I got from you guys from it was like, yeah, totally. You got this. It was like, kind of like, all right, let's, now I really got something to prove.
Reaffirming, right?
Yeah, totally.
So I outwardly express like full support of that. Inside, I'm thinking, and I've never told you this, I'm thinking George has no idea what he's getting himself into. Like, you know, I'm sure he's going to do well at those events, but winning those three events, like that's nonsense. Right. And right. You completely proved me wrong, as well as anyone else that doubted you, because you got first, fifth, and first in those three events. So right. What was it exactly that made you so confident in predicting how you would do on those workouts? Like, how do you know what you're good at to that extent?
Honestly, it's kind of, I guess my time with Brute, kind of getting every aspect of different workouts. Like, at the end of the day, we all do the same workouts, just different movements together, if that makes any sense. So when I saw these three workouts. They were a little bit shorter time domain, which I'm good at going fast, short. But like individually, I guess looking at event two, the 21:15:9 ring dips and snatches, that the dumbbell I knew was going to be light and I would be able to rock the dumbbell pretty quickly. It's 80 pounds. I mean, it's kind of grip and rip on that. And then ring dips, something I've always felt pretty confident in. And I've spent so much time doing ring dips in the last couple years that I knew that, you know, this is something that I could just really floor down and people are going to burn out on, and I'm not, just because of the capacity I built in that movement. Any kind of like push-up pressing, that's kind of my jam. So for event two, I just like, I'm just going to go as fast as my body will let me go and hope that the little guys, you know, don't keep up with me when it comes to dumbbell snatches. Mm-hmm. Skipping over four real quick and going to six, that was, I mean, there's really not a whole lot of skill in it. I mean, some would argue that there is some skill on the bag clean and on the bike. But it really comes down to just how bad do you want it? You know, it's like remember in January, maybe it was even as early as December, November of last year, when I switched over to the endurance group with Brute, my awakening was every Monday assault bike sprints or assault bike intervals. So we did, just real briefly, we did like 50 calorie, 40, 30, 20, 10, like stuff like that for time, rest one, one. And, I remember my first day doing it was just miserable. And I was like, how do I make the most of this without suffering so bad? And, a good friend of mine, actually, Jeff Kubik up in Canada, he's like, you know, if you just sell out on the bike early and get the calories done faster, you can spend that extra time to rest and you won't be as miserable as long. I'm like, well, obviously, that makes sense. When you put it like that, okay. So as I progress through these workouts earlier in the season, I learned, okay, I can just sprint 50 calories, you know, 25 seconds and be done with it, where other people are going to take a minute. I could rest like, you know, 10 seconds, whatever, and get right back to work. So looking at that workout, I'm like, okay, 30 calories on a bike, cake. Like it's cakewalk, easy. I've done this so many times. And then the burpee box jump overs really was the only spot I was kind of worried about, just because, you know, it's a breathing movement. It's kind of longer movement.
I'll tell you what, before you tell this story, tell everybody what the workout was exactly.
Okay. So event six was 30 calories on the solid air bike, 20 burpee box overs, and then we had 10 sandbag cleans with the 150 pound bag.
And and give a little backstory. You had done well all weekend, but you were in a spot that you had to win this workout.
Oh yeah. I mean, that was probably the major factor in it, on the weekend. But as far as like going into it, training before I even hit the workout, I mean, I guess when we practiced it the first time, I knew that I would just be able to smoke it. I mean, that was just a workout that I could move through, push myself through. And like my body was the only thing that was going to get in my way. Like my mind wasn't going to stop me. So then we got a little off track a little, but, then going back to just event four. So that was the one that was started with handstand walks, like 60 feet. Then you had toes to bar, and then you had some kettlebell deadlifts. And it was the first time that Dave Castro put handstand walking in the middle of a workout. Because, you know, like previous years, you'd either like start with it, like that would like be the buy-in or whatever. And he never really tested anybody handstand walking when they're tired. So in my mind, I was like, nobody practices this. I'm going to crush this. I do this.
Right.
So, I mean, I guess like the gist of it here is experience. Like, I feel like I've done it in my training, and that's why those three events really stood out to me, is like, these are mine to win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, and you're not giving yourself enough credit for the awareness that you have of yourself in general, because a lot of people have done a lot of workouts, but they don't have the same level of, they're not as conscious of what they're good at and what they're not. right? They're not able to use all of that information like you are. So I think just the ability to say, those are my workout, and you've never been to regionals before as an individual, and to know that you're going to win those workouts is an incredible skill. So take us through this last workout. So, you know, tell us a little briefly about the beginning of the weekend and then how it led up to this last workout.
Oh yeah. So this is good. This is good. So leading up to the weekend after having practicing these workouts, so the West Regional was the third week. So we had to watch all the other regions go the 2 weeks prior. So I spent way too long doing these workouts over and over again. So the anticipation to like go and prove that, you know, my practice times were meeting up with the guys that were in the top five in other regions. So for me, it was like, I just got to go out and perform and I'm going to qualify for the games. But man, I wasn't prepared for that pressure. And when I got out there on that first day on Friday, we had the, like the twist on Murph with the run buy-in with the 10 round handstand pushups, chest to bar and air squats with a vest on. I practiced that workout so many times and I got faster every time I practiced it. I was looking forward to a big PR, but as soon as I got off that 1200 meter run, I was just out of it. I was gone. And I feel like I ran the same pace I practiced and everything. But when I slid underneath the wall to start those 10 rounds, I was dizzy. I couldn't see straight. Mm-hmm. Like I was overheating almost. And I mean, it could have been a lot of things, but I honestly chalk it up to experience and nerves. Mm-hmm. Like I let my nerves get the best of me. I wasn't prepared for the pressure that being on the floor next to guys that only watched on TV and from the stands was going to put on me. Mm-hmm. After I got through event one, somehow I found my way. I stumbled off the floor and I just like barfed. Like I lost my breakfast like three times. I was dizzy. I was laid out back in the athlete area for up until about 30 minutes before event two started. And I honestly, during that time, had the worst self-talk. You know, I was like, I'm done. Like I'm embarrassed myself. You know, my time was like 4 minutes or something slower than what I'd practiced. I'm like, this is like, I didn't feel like myself. Mm-hmm. And, I had extreme doubt on the first day going in. And when event two came around, I was like, well, I know what I'm capable of. I know that this is, you know, this is a quick workout. I want to get this over with. I can, you know, refuel and hopefully come back the next day and, you know, execute my game plan and be all right. And hopefully this is just some damage control. You know, the weekend's just started and, let's just see what happens. So, I mean, let's just see what happens. Turn into an event win in event number two. And, I went home, recovered the next day. And when I woke up on Saturday, I was feeling pretty wrecked. Like my CNS was just toast. Like just completely fried, and I felt like I had been competing for 5 days.
Right.
On day two, and again, I was like, you know, I've got this. I'll be all right. It's nothing. Like it's consider it nothing. It's fine. You know, I'm gonna go out there. I'm gonna do what I can do, and I'm gonna. It's not over yet. It's a long weekend. I'm going into, I guess, event three. It would be on Saturday. We started that workout and I got done with, so the workout started with like 100-foot overhead lunge. And the last like 10 steps of that lunge, my legs were already on fire. And I had done like a complete warm up, cool down. Like I fueled properly. I did everything I needed to do that day. But within a minute of starting this, you know, this big chipper, I felt toast. I felt like I was done. Mm-hmm. So, this kind of continued throughout the workout that day for that event. And then again, for event four, I had extreme confidence going in, but once everything started and kind of starting to settle, I didn't feel like myself. And I, you know, going at the end of the day on day two, I just had the most like extreme doubt that, you know, maybe this year is not my year and, you know, we'll see what happens. I'm not going to quit. You know, that's not an option. It never is an option, but I felt really embarrassed for myself. And I felt like I had let myself and my gym and even my family down at that point. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of hard to describe, but I feel like I, Saturday night going into Sunday morning, I kind of mentally checked out. Like I was like, this is a wash. Like I'm just going to finish the weekend. I got two workouts. They're going to take me no more than like, I got the way I viewed it and practiced it. I was like, I've got no more than 12 minutes of exercise left,
right?
You know, and you know, that's going to be my year and we're going to get ready for next year. So yeah, big day, last day. I think I was in like ninth going into event five, and I knew what I needed to do. I knew that there were going to be guys, you know, I think Cody Anderson was in the same heat as me. Yeah, because I was in that final heat. So Cody Anderson was in the heat as me. I'm pretty sure he set an event record on event five. It was the muscle ups and dumbbell overhead squats, mm-hmm. right? Built for that guy. So it was awesome, like, you know, to hear the crowd and stuff. But for me, I was like, you know, I got to run my game plan. I got to do what I'm going to do. I'm not going to try to be a hero on this. I'm just going to, I know my capacity on muscle ups. I know my capacity on these dumbbell overhead squats. I know I need to keep it calmer longer than normal. Contrary to my famous, you know, go out fast and hard and just hold on.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me stop you here too. Yeah. I think, so when a lot of people, I think it's super common what you were experiencing up to that point. Everyone that goes into regionals has some, you know, believes to some extent that they're making to the games. And then 40 of the 50 people or 40 of the 60 people, you know, after day one, think they have no shot, right? And so it really kills their spirits. They have this same negative self-talk that you have, but you continue to go out and compete nearly or at your best. So in this fifth workout, how did you prevent that negative self-talk from turning into you just giving up and underperforming?
I honestly started to trust, right? I had to just trust in my ability. I think I went into the weekend knowing that I, or, you know, maybe a little overconfident in my ability, that things were just going to be, you know, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to work out, and then that's going to be it. But going into event five and that whole final day of competition, I found a level of trust for myself that I was like, I know what I need to do. I know what I'm capable of, and I know what needs to happen, and I can't stop. Like, I have to keep moving forward. No matter what happens, I have to keep moving forward. Mm-hmm. So really, I just, the best way I can describe it, or what I describe it as, is flow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like an outer body experience that I've kind of had or learned with just meditating, where I just kind of, I like to visualize a workout kind of before I do it, or anything big, like a meeting, or if I'm coaching like a big class at the gym or something like that, I like to kind of visualize and draw it out in my head on how things need to go. And I almost have an outer body experience when I see it happen, if I'm sitting down, you know, like meditation. So I did that on Saturday. I think I didn't really talk to anybody at breakfast. And I when we first got there, I was like, I'm gonna wait a little longer to warm up because I'm feeling so beat right now. And I sat in the corner and I visualized that workout. I visualized event five. I visualized exactly how I was gonna break everything up, how many breaths I was gonna take between my reps. And that was really it. I mean, once 3, 2, 1, and they sound the buzzer and we started, I just went. Like, it's hard to describe it, honestly.
No, that's yeah, awesome. So
it
yeah,
wasn't keep, like anything keep, I felt that in the two previous days.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, keep going. Tell us about the fifth.
I went out. I had this sense of kind of flow. You know, I went through, before I knew it, 21 muscle ups were over, and I'm literally like watching myself do this workout. Like, I felt like I was there, but I wasn't there. You know, like, I heard the noise And it was the first time that I think I stopped hearing individual voices of the noise. And I felt energy from the people around me. And I kind of used that to just keep moving forward. Mm-hmm. And I didn't look left and right. And I didn't care what anyone else was doing. I was looking 6 feet in front of my steps in my lane. And like, that's all I could really focus on, you know, just keep moving forward, keep moving forward. I think that was, had to be my mantra of that day, of that workout. Mm-hmm. So when I finished ahead of a few people in my heat, I was definitely a little surprised. I think when I got back to the warm-up area, Nick was like, yeah, you did good. And we executed a game plan and we're not too far out, and it's not over, right? It's not over yet. It's not over. And, I mean, in my mind, I was like, yeah, it's not over, but I think I had bumped up to 7th place by this point after event 5. And I was like 30 some points out, like 34 points or something like that. But I knew that, you know, this workout doesn't require the event 6 going into it. That doesn't require really any thought. And it requires just emptying the tank. Like, this is just an empty the tank workout. And we, Nick and I talked about a little bit of a game plan. He's like, you know, you're not the same person you were whenever we practice these. So that game plan that you had before may not work. Mm-hmm. So what we're going to do is you need to take it out about 90 on the bike, 90%. Then when you hit the box, 95%. And then when you get to the bag, you need to dump it. You need to just 100% all out, go finish. And, you know, I was kind of taken back by this, because I was like, Nick, this is my last event for the year, for the season. I'm like, so if I overpace this thing and I don't win it like I thought I could, then do I look back all year and regret, you know? And I'm in retrospect now, I'm glad I didn't. You know, I'm glad we switched, or I switched. I made the decision to switch the game plan there last minute. To really just emptying it, you know, just going out and doing what I knew I was capable of doing. Like, mm-hmm. I said before, like, building that trust in myself and finding that flow state again of, this is what I'm capable of. And no matter what happens, I'm going to make this happen. And that workout is designed just perfectly for that. It's literally a sprint, like, empty the tank. How bad do you want it? Do you want to go out and say you tried, or you want to go out and say you gave everything you possibly could? Mm-hmm. And I did that.
Badass, man. Yeah. That was one of the most exciting events that I've ever watched.
Yeah. I lost my voice there at the end of that one. Cause about halfway through those burpee box jump overs, I was like rep 12. My body did some kind of like weird, like, it stopped working for a second. And then you could see it on, if you could watch, go back and watch the video, when I put my hands on the box, it's like my feet don't leave the ground right away. Mm-hmm. And it was at that point that I started, like, every time my chest would hit the ground, I would let out like this warrior like grunt from my belly, you know, like that would be enough to bounce off the ground. Uh-huh. And keep going. And then when I got to the bag, I remember my legs feeling so heavy. Like, I felt like I couldn't even walk. Mm-hmm. And every rep, it felt like someone added 50 pounds to that bag. So, like, I would bend over to grab the bag and get it to my chest, and it's like I couldn't open my hips anymore. And I would just scream. Like, I was just yelling as loud as I could at this bag to get over my shoulder. And every rep, like, I heard so much, so many people yelling by this point, that I was like, it was, I don't know, it was crazy, man. I can't even really describe the feeling that I had. I was just, there was no, my mind, like, tried to stop me, but it did not stand a chance. It did not stand a chance. There's no way. There's no way I was going to stop. And I didn't even know, you know, I didn't know that if I win this event, I'm going to the games. Like, that wasn't even my thought. My thought was, I'm not going to go out at 80%. I'm not going to go out at 90%. You know, I'm not going to look back and say, what if? I'm going to finish and say, I did everything I could possibly do. And it was either enough or it wasn't, mm-hmm. but I did what I knew I could do. And that was give it everything I had.
And so I did cool. That. So cool, man. So I want to back up now, and we're going to talk about the games later, but I want to back up. So just 2 years earlier, you had gotten 81st in your region in the Open. So, I mean, you're really not even close to qualifying for regionals at that point. And 2 years before that, you were 309th, right? At that point, you're just an average Joe in any gym.
Right.
So what was it? I'm not sure I ever had the conversation with you about how you started with us. So how did you hear about Brute, and why did you start in the first place?
So I heard about Brute. Really, I heard about you guys from 2012 and 13, right? You guys won the Affiliate Cup Champs.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that was my initial kind of contact with what Brute, what it was. I knew that you and Matt Bruce had like the Brute Oli thing going on, and I was at the time doing, I think I was doing barbell wad or something like that. And it was like, I was piecing together all of my workouts. So I would like do like barbell wad for my lifting. And then like, I would do skill wad halfway just to try to build. And really it was just like max effort of pull-ups, toes to bar, whatever, without, you know, much structure to it. Mm-hmm. And then the Metcons, I would just make it myself. So I'd be like, okay, I need to go long, short, I need a sprint, I need, I don't know, a chipper. Like, I would try to just, like, I haven't done a 21-15-9 this week, so I'm going to do a 21-15-9 mm-hmm. this week. And it's kind of like whatever was on the whiteboard at the gym we were at. And just kind of like floating from blog posts, you know, like Comp Train and Invictus, and these are great programs, but it's like, I would, one day I would do a Comp Train workout, and the next day I would do an Invictus workout, and the next day I would do whatever the whiteboard had at the CrossFit gym I was going to. And it was one of my old friends that was like, you know, if we're going to get better at this, we should create a plan. If like this is what we're going to do. And it was like, I think in the talks of just, one, opening the gym that we have now, and making this my next thing after I got out of the military. Mm-hmm. So as I was leaving one, you know, potential career, I needed to get my feet set in something else. And just like kind of anything else I've ever done, it's, if I'm doing something halfway, I'm not going to do it for very long. It's like, it's going to happen for, you know, if I'm not fully committed to a plan, then yeah, I mean, then I'm going to get 50% of the result from it, right? Maybe halfway out of it. So yeah, I mean, I just kind of looked around, and when I'm not sure how I found Brute, honestly. I don't know what came up, but I know I looked on the webpage, and saw that, you know, you guys had everything in one place, and that you had a gymnastics coach, you had a weightlifting coach, you had an endurance coach, you had this affiliate cup, you know, championships, you know, you had this experience on your team.
I ate Fruit Loops out of the cup, for instance.
Yeah, out of the cup, man. I'm like, that's
what I want. That's badass, and I want to be a part of that.
That thing. But yeah, so it kind of seemed like a no-brainer because nobody else was doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, there's other methodologies out there that at the time, I mean, it's all CrossFit at the end of the day, but like there weren't multiple experts in one place for one price, and it was almost like hitting an easy button.
Ooh!
So I figured, you know, if I could take my
hitting the easy button, I like that.
I hit the easy button. I mean, I love you and all, but I hit the easy button.
Fuck yeah.
But yeah, it just seemed like, it kind of seemed like a no-brainer to put all my energy in one place. And that's what Brute had to offer.
Right. So I think it was September, October, and Adi and I were on our, you know, our little travel trailer experience, and we stopped into Seattle. And I walked into your gym, and That's the first time I met you, and you were doing a workout, and that is when I understood that you're the type of guy that is going to do every single thing that we tell him, right? Like the level of intention and attention to detail that you gave to every part of that workout that I did with you guys was something that I've not seen in any of our other athletes. And amongst the brute coaches, we've talked about you a lot in that regard, because it's like we put so much effort into the programming, yet so few people stick to the entire thing, right? They take off the warm up, or they don't hold themselves back on the gymnastics progression when we tell them to. But right. you did what we told you to, and I think it benefited you tremendously. So what do you think about you? What is it about you that made you either trust in the process or just pay attention to all of those little details?
I think it kind of goes back to putting everything into everything that really means anything to me. Mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Totally.
I was getting out of the military, and I was looking for the next thing that I was going to do. And once we had the opportunity to open the CrossFit gym, start running our own affiliate, you know, it's like we could just be another box that people come work out at and just be a social club and all that good stuff. Nothing wrong with it. Or we could, you know, ask more of ourselves and ask more of our members. And I felt like, you know, if I'm going to be I'm going to be the guy that people look up to here, that they want my help. They want to know how to get better at pull-ups. They want to know how to get better at weightlifting, or why their engine is so bad, even though they know they don't ever like to run. I should know enough to be able to kind of relay that to them. And then like, what's better? Like, so this is, I guess, there's a bunch of different sides to this, because we could talk about business and we could talk about community aspect and that kind of stuff. So I'm going to just sound a little bit, selfish when I say that, like, I want to, if I'm going to be the person, like the leader, you know, then I'm going to walk the walk mm-hmm. every day. And for me, like, if I'm going to teach you how to do CrossFit and I like being competitive, then I might as well be a competitive athlete. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm getting a little bit off track here, I think.
No, that's fine, dude. It's timely that you say that, because I just saw this awesome little either quote or some concept of, I think it was Seth Godin in his blog this morning or something, said like, if you want your team, right? If you're a leader and you want the people that are following you to adopt a new habit or a new behavior, then you have to adopt that new habit or behavior first. It's one thing to tell your community how they should act and how they should think, but it's an entirely different thing for you to act and think that way and for that to rub off on them, right? Because people are going to do what we do, not what we say.
Right.
So I think that's awesome.
Totally agree. I got like a little bit of an athletic background, not anything crazy. Like, I'm no one special. I played, you know, football in high school and I had fun with that. I wasn't any kind of, you know, crazy guy that had all these D1 scholarships offered to me or anything like that. Maybe football wasn't, you know, obviously it wasn't what I was meant to do. And maybe all my heart and passion wasn't in that. So then when I started doing CrossFit and I found that I wasn't that bad at CrossFit, and that if I clean these little things up, that maybe I could be really great at it. Mm-hmm. And then of course you see the CrossFit games and, you know, I get inspired by that and looking up to, at the time, like those athletes, you know, Rich Froning being who he was at the time, and, you know, Ben Smith, Scott Panchik, all those guys. And it's like, I could do that. You know, I know I could do that. And it's always like, I've got this fear, I still fear this, of like unfulfilled potential. Mm-hmm. So if I can tell myself that I can do it, or I feel like it's something that I could excel at, then why not? You know,
right?
And why not try it? And if worst thing is going to happen is I'm going to fail and I find out that it wasn't, or maybe it wasn't right at that time, but there's going to be a lesson in it, you know. And that's either way, if I'm winning either way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, when it comes to like the programming and doing everything in its entirety that you guys give out for us, like I said, it was kind of like a no-brainer. Like, these are the experts. I'm going to do what they tell me to do. Think about it. It says Brute Games Prep, and I want to go to the CrossFit Games.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to follow the Games Prep so I can go to the Games. Like, that's – if I do these things, Mike Cashew says I can make it to the CrossFit Games. I'm going to do these things.
Amen, man. Amen.
Yeah.
So was there a moment where you really started to believe? So you just talked about, you know, you used to look up to these guys like Ben and Scott and all of these big time CrossFit Games athletes. Was there an event or a moment that you remember where you started to really believe that you could be one of them?
I think maybe I had the idea whenever it was probably like a year or two ago. I did the regional workouts. I think this is actually before I started Brute. So I did some of the regional workouts the same weekend that the Northwest Regional, I think at the time, did the workouts. So I stayed in the gym that weekend and did them. And then I would compare my times to the athletes that were there on the floor. And I think, I don't remember off the top of my head, but I remember doing all these workouts and like averaging the scores of where I would have been if I was on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And I averaged like sixth place at the end of the weekend. And I was like, whoa, like, hold on a second. These guys are doing these workouts in these times in my region. Like, I can beat these guys. I can go to the games if I just do it. You know, if I just put everything into this, and this, like I said, this was before Brute. So it was before I put everything into the sport. And yeah, I think that was kind of like a big eye opener for me. And then as soon as I started saying that out loud, I'd said that to my friends and my family. You know, I kind of built this support crew of people telling me that I could, and especially like my business partners now, like, they have the utmost belief that I can do anything I set my mind to. And that was just one of them. You know, one of the major things you have, if you build your team, then, you know, if you have this support crew, it's kind of like, it takes a thought out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because like, I say this all the time too. It's like, I can let myself down, but I can't let other people down, you know? So like in those times where I hold back a little bit, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I can't think of an example right now off the top of my head, but, it's easier for me to pull back whenever I'm tired, you know. But if I have people around me that I know are depending on me to not pull back, I'm not going to.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that was going back to the event six on the sandbag lanes. Like, my support crew was all at the end of that lane. Like, everyone was there at the end of the lane.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm walking the sandbag down, like, I look forward and they're all standing there. So it's like, my body's not going to stop me right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, these people are counting on me to finish. I'm going to finish, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So you've really adopted this mindset of how you do anything is how you do everything. And you kind of mentioned that a while back. So as you become a professional athlete, you've had to adopt certain habits and rituals associated with being a professional, right? Like, things that used to be okay for you as just someone that was doing the open are no longer okay. How has that shown up in other areas of your life? Has that spilled over into kind of into you becoming a more high performing individual in general?
I think it's really poured over really in just and my mindset and how I approach each day of the week. I've been, and this is something that it's like always, it's always changing. You know, like I have a few routines that I like to get into, but I'm always kind of changing what I'm doing just so I can always challenge myself. I feel like if I get set too deeply into a routine that I start to depend on it. We talked earlier about like some things I like to do. Like I like to have my breakfast at a certain time every day. You know, I like to run my day around my meals and that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, so when it comes to other areas of my life, I guess my the biggest things that I've kind of adopted to is my nutrition, and my sleep and my recovery. Those, like anytime I'm outside of the gym, that's what I'm focused on. So, I mean, Nick Fowler calls it the other 23 hours, which I joke with him all the time because I'm in the gym like 6 hours with the stuff he gives me to do. But, you know, so it's like the other 14 hours of my day. So I guess that's the main thing. So I'm like, I'm taking Epsom salt baths the nights I get home early enough and I'm not coaching. Right. So if I get home early, I'm going to Epsom salt bath. I'm going to make sure my meals are set out for the next day, which they almost always are. But, you know, I still will go in the refrigerator and open up the bin and like make sure that all my sweet potatoes are there and like I have enough, you know. I guess it's kind of like a tick I have now, but, and then as far as like rituals go, it really, this time of year, it's like things get, I'm not as, like I talked a little bit about meditating before an event, competition style stuff. I'm not as into it as I should be this time of year. I always kind of let it go by the wayside. You know, I might meditate one or two times a week now, rather than like every day when the season starts. And, you know, it's something that's always changing. So I can't call it a ritual, but it's something I wish I did more of. One thing that I've really, really been trying to do, really this started actually only a couple weeks ago, but I'm trying to stay off of my phone like the first hour of the day.
Game changer.
I don't remember who, I was just listening to this podcast the other day. But you know, I was saying like, if you win the first hour of the day, that's how you win the rest of the day, right? So like if I can stay off my phone the first hour of the day, and I still use it as my alarm clock, which I know everyone's like, just go buy an $8 alarm clock. Just go buy an alarm clock. You don't need your phone in the room with you. I got it, but I'm only human. So my phone's still my alarm clock, but when I turn off my alarm clock, I really try to challenge myself to stay off of social media and try to stay away from the emails. And I think what that does is it lets me make the decision on how my day is going to go. And it's crazy because I've got all these hours in the day. You can change it at any time, but mentally it does something different for me. And I think it's because our generation and society that we live in now is like instant gratification for everything. You know, you open up Instagram, you see these likes, you see these shares, and it's like that dopamine in your head. Like it's like a drug almost, right? So if I can avoid that and I can create it for myself, if I can create my own, my own shell of the day without kind of like going in zombie mode in the beginning, in the first half of the day, it just makes the biggest difference. So really in the last 2 weeks, I've been getting better with this, but it's like that is one thing I'm trying to build as a habit. You know, if I could just stay off of the phone the first hour of the day, then it just changes things so much. I challenge anyone and everyone out there listening to try it. Just try it.
It's fucking huge, man. It takes you from being reactive to proactive, right? As soon as you get on your phone, you see text messages, social media, emails that require you to react to whatever other people want from you, right? Exactly. Or what other things require of you. And staying off of it allows you to create the rest of your day, right? Whether it be writing or just having a really calm, like present morning. And it allows you to be in control of the rest of your day rather than always feeling like you're catching up to and reacting to what life has to throw to you. As simple as it is, that is a completely like life altering trick to do.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I couldn't have said it better. That's exactly it. I mean, it's like what we do in our programming or in our life or anything, you know, it's like, if I'm reactive, then I'm always a step behind, you know, if I'm proactive, and obviously I'm the opposite.
So what's been the biggest mindset shift for you over the past, say, year?
We talking just in general?
In general, yeah. That's led to, you know, higher performance in life or sport.
I think the biggest thing I've learned really is to trust myself. I've always got a way of like, and I don't know if this is really bad, but I like kind of second guess things all the time, because I always wonder what if, you know. And it's hard not to look left and right at what other people are doing and not to get that thing you call like shiny object syndrome, you know.
Yep.
So really it's just trusting myself and my ability to be able to kind of take, you know, I like to have a longer, like a 5-year plan, you know, but if I can look 6 months ahead and know that, you know, I'm going to be all right, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And not just be all right, but I'm going to do the things I want to do. I'm going to live the life I want to live. Then everything's going to work out. So, I think just trusting in my gut instincts and my decisions of what I'm going to do, of like where I'm going to live and how I'm going to work and how I'm going to approach my training and what am I going to do to make my, you know, my whole, my village, if you will, my people, better with me, for me, to me, all those things, you know, then, you know, then I'm living the life that I want to live. You know, I'm going to be happy if I'm trusting myself.
So what you talked about, making sure that other people are living the way they, something to that effect, like the way that they should or something like that. Why is that important?
I mean, it's otherwise, then you only have yourself, you know? I mean, I can't sit back and say, you know, everything I do in life is because of me. You know, I like to think of that. I like to think that way sometimes, that I'm, you know, I am independent, but I'm like, not that I'm the only person in the world and the world revolves around me, you know? So like, I'm a kind of like a new, this goes back to the mindset shift a little bit, is that, you know, those athletes that I used to look up to, like, I'm that person now for other people. And I have this reach to like the military community now, which, you know, I don't like to think of it as something that defines me as a person, that, you know, the time I served in the military, but it is, you know, it does. And for people who literally only know me from, you know, Facebook or Instagram or what, any of like CrossFit media or any of my sponsors post or publish about me, like, that's inspiring to them, you know? So if I'm living, you know, recklessly, or if I'm just, I don't know, not taking myself too seriously, but if I'm not always moving forward and people see that, then it's like you make an excuse not to keep moving forward. You know what I mean? And that's like what it's all about at the end of the day. Like, no one wants to be stagnant and just, this is what I want to do. And everyone jokes about, like, oh, I can't wait till I retire. But you will say that, but then what?
Right.
You know, you're going to retire and you're going to get into something else, you know? So you're always going to need something to keep you going. You know, that's otherwise you're not, I don't know.
No, I completely understand. And, but I think that actually nowadays it's like, it's super common. Actually, maybe it's changing in the positive direction, but I think it's really common for people to delay happiness, thinking that once they retire or once they make a certain amount of money, then they will be happiness. Then they will be happy, and then they will have the freedom to do what they want to do, rather than realizing that they have the means necessary now to be happy. Right? They have everything they need to be happy now.
Right.
And just getting used to the fact that it's a lifelong journey, and not like a destination to be reached.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, and it all comes with sacrifice. And I think that's the hardest part of it, is that we're scared because we've been told the story our entire lives. I mean, especially like our generation, like I said, it is changing, but we've been told the story all our lives that we're supposed to, you know, have this career that we're set in until we're 55, 60 years old, and then we'll retire, and then we'll just be old, and, you know, we'll collect this social security check and whatever we've earned our life, and then we'll just like wait to die. Like, that sounds depressing. Mm-hmm. That sounds depressing to me. And that's the way generations before us have lived, and that's what worked then, but that's not what's going to work now.
Right. So. Yeah. Totally fine for anyone that does. That's their reality. But I agree with you that it's not an exciting future to enroll yourself in, right?
Because then you're always waiting,
right?
You know, I hate waiting in line. I go to the donut store. I want my donuts. You know,
it's a great point.
I mean,
it really illustrates what we're talking about.
I hate standing in line for coffee, but I got to stand in line for coffee. Actually, now
I don't know where you went with the whole line thing, but I appreciate your two examples.
I'm just thinking about coffee, man. I don't know.
So let's jump into the games, man. We got a few more minutes until we wrap this thing up, but I want to talk about your experience at the games. Okay. So the Assault Banger workout, one of the most exciting workouts in the history of the games, because it's just really short, fast, and powerful. Yeah. So tell them what the workout was and like where your head was at going into this thing.
Okay. So, salt banger workout. So I think it was 40 calories. I think it was 40 calories on the salt bike. And then we had to, hit the banger. Basically, it was a big giant metal block. I don't even know what the distance was, but basically smack this thing from one end to the next with a sledgehammer. And that was a workout. That was it. It was short. That day was actually pretty cool day, I think, of competition. I liked the first day. My favorite event, honestly, I know I won the salt banger. My favorite event was the cyclocross. But like that, the whole day I was kind of feeling, I don't know, I felt kind of weird, I guess. I don't know where I'm going with this, but going into that workout, I hit a solid snatch just before. I was a little under my goal, but it was good enough to keep me kind of high in the points. And once we went out on the floor and Dave Castro announced his event, I kind of got goosebumps because I got so excited. And I'm like, I'm the only one out there like kind of smiling. Like, some people are like, oh great, you know, oh, salt bike. And I actually got like really excited about this event. I think it was the only event that I really just started kind of like salivating for. And when we walked off the floor and got in the back, and I've Nick Fowler came down the stairs, and I was like, so what do you think? He's like, just go. Right on. Like, I like that plan. I can get behind that plan. So that was, I didn't know what to expect. You had people in the back, like hitting stuff with PVC pipe, like trying to practice their swing and all that. And I was like, you know, we're going to get this hammer, and I'm in the same boat as everyone else, unless they're at home practicing this, or the firefighters, you know what I mean? Like, they have some sort of training on this thing. We went out, and right before we took the floor, actually, Dave Castro was standing there behind the curtain. And I was like, so pumped. I was like, I need to say something epic to Dave Castro before I get up to him. And they're like calling out one person at a time. And, I'm like three people back. I'm like, what am I going to say to him? Like, do I say thank you? Or like, what do I do? Like, I need to say something he's going to remember. So the next person in front of me goes out. I think it was Travis Mayer goes out in front of me. And then I'm the next person in line. I look over at Dave and I said, I'm going to make your bike smoke. And he just laughed. And I don't know if he remembers or if he was like, oh yeah, this rookie, just whatever, you know, or maybe he was just like focused on flow of everything. Cause they, you know, that's normally where his mind's at. And they do actually a great job of it every year. So yeah, I said that and like, I didn't really get the reaction I wanted from him. And I was like, man, this is like, just like before regionals, like I got something to prove now. These guys don't believe me. So yeah, I mean, went out there and got it all set up, and before I knew it, like I 3-2-1 go, I hopped on the bike and I was like, I'm just going to sprint till this thing says like 37 calories and I'll let it coast in. And I closed my eyes and I started sprinting and opened my eyes. It said like 13 calories. I closed my eyes again, opened them up again, 28 calories. Closed my eyes, opened them again. It's like 37, 38.
Hell yeah.
40 calories is done. And before I know it, I'm the only one stepping forward to grab the sledgehammer to start smacking this big metal banger, which is like probably one of the coolest. Like it gave me another boost of adrenaline. Like I felt like I didn't just bike 40 calories. Like I felt lifted. I felt like I literally floated over. And yeah, I mean, I don't know that there's much really to it. I kind of just smacked this thing down the ramp till it got to the end. I mean, there was a lot of hate going on about people dragging the banger, but you put us in this environment that literally calls for us to empty the tank in a workout that implements a fairly new device to the majority of the field. I don't know what they really expected to happen. I can guarantee that none of the athletes out there were dragging it on purpose. I mean, maybe they're, I think one or two guys, one of my my favorite misfit athletes, said, well, I'm just going to drag it because I can, but I'm not going to embarrass him right now. But yeah, I mean, I just kind of did my thing and turned around, and that was the first one done, and it was pretty sweet. I was immediately pulled off the floor to get drug tested, which was nice. pretty.
It's a great compliment, right?
Yeah. I
mean, when people either think you're on drugs or, yeah, when they think you're on drugs.
Yeah, it was
no better compliment.
Was, and especially afterwards with, you know, all the other stuff that happened. It's like whenever, I don't know who it was, came on, said it's like subjective testing. So like they only test people that they think are using something, or they hear, you know, they listen to the community. So I'm like, oh, cool. So can't just sprint on a bike anymore these days.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was what it was. I mean, I feel like I loved the event win, but I didn't love sitting back in the drug testing room for an hour and a half trying to like take my body out of fight or flight and go pee.
Yeah.
That was pretty bad. But
so did Dave ever give you some love for, I don't know if you actually made his bike smoke, but
I tried.
You kind of called your shot.
I feel like there was a little bit, but no, man, I was really expecting to get a hammer out of that, but
well, you broke it.
Well, you know, at least give me that one, you know, give me the hammer. But no, he didn't say anything about it. And I think like in a later interview, he said he wasn't happy about how it went or something. I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. I don't know, man.
So was there any other moment in the games that really stood out for you?
It was surreal to be around some of these athletes. I mean, there's a couple highlights. I'll just briefly, like when we lined up for the run, swim, run, and I'm in, like, they have the guys in the front and the ladies in the back, like, I don't know, 10 feet back or something like that. And I'm just looking around at this point, and I'm just staring at all these athletes I've watched on YouTube, you know, these past years. And it like hit me. I'm like, I'm here right now. Like, this is real. This is a real thing that I did. That was a pretty surreal moment. And then hitting on day two on the one rep max snatch event, whenever I missed like my first lift, and then I kind of did this self mantra, pacing back and forth, just like getting really pumped up and worked up for this lift, and then nailing it. That was a big moment for me of again, trust in my ability and, you know, fully committing to what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I talk with Matty B a lot about this, and yeah, that's one.
That's Matt Bruce for those listening.
Oh, Matty B, that's a highlight. He's always trying to get me to light the fire. I'm like, dude, I can't light the fire every day. I'm trying, but anyways, that was the moment I lit the fire. Day three, I remember feeling flat the entire day. That was like the worst day of competition for me. And I don't know if it was because like my post-workout after the salt banger was an hour and a half sitting in a room trying to chug water to pee, or I was just tired, or what it was, honestly. But I had a day on Saturday that just, I don't know, just didn't go so hot for me. I remember one big takeaway is that I need to train more on a yoke. After the Strongman Sphere event, I thought I was going to rock that thing, and then I got rocked. Mm-hmm. So that was an eye opener for sure. Heavy 17.5. That was after the clean event. I like failed my 90% out there on the floor like twice. And I was like, you know, there cannot be a worse workout than that one. Like, I am done with the worst workouts. Nothing could be worse. And then heavy 17.5 came out, which was my worst open workout. I think I finished 68th in my region in that workout. Yeah, so when that came out, I was just like, are you kidding me? So I learned from that you can only control what you can control. And something I've always known, I think, and it was a huge reminder to me that you can make the most of this, or you cannot, and you could just suffer and be miserable. Mm-hmm. And be a poor sport about it.
Do you feel bad that Carl Webb beat you in 17.5?
No.
At the games, really. When she did your weight?
No, she's a beast.
I'm just messing with you. I have no idea if she did. I just wanted to see what you said.
I'm pretty sure she did. I think I could actually look it up real quick, but I'm pretty sure she did beat me.
Like, that'd be incredible if she did. I don't even know if she won that. She's just the first person that came to mind.
Matt Fraser's time was my open time with 95 pounds.
Jesus.
Like, yeah. So needless to say, my off season has been full of wall balls and thrusters and learning how to squat real fast. That's been fun.
Hell yeah.
Fun. So that's kind of a takeaway from the game too. That was we squatted a lot at the games. Mm-hmm. And I'm not I'm going to be now, but in the past I haven't been an athlete that's like, I can squat well, but I can't squat fast, and I like my squatting endurance is not the best.
Right.
Or wasn't the best. But that was a huge takeaway from the games, that this is an area that there's a hole in my game and I need to work on it. So I was overall satisfied, I think, with what happened at the games, where I ended up, even though 4 points would have put me in the top 20, whatever. I put forth everything I needed to put forth and do what I needed to do, but I did find that I've got a lot of work to do still.
So just to bring it full circle back to where we started, you really created this opportunity for yourself, and you made it to the games because you saw this vision. You saw, you know, you believed that it was possible, and then you made it happen. So what is your biggest takeaway from your experience over the past 3 years of you progressing as you did, and what advice do you have for others with, you know, a similar vision as you?
My biggest takeaway, there's been a lot. I think really my biggest takeaway is from the last 3 years, I guess, is to really just to trust in myself, trust in the process, whether it's the process or a process, whatever it's, however you want to itemize that. If you're gonna do something that's worth doing, then put everything into it. That's gotten me to where I am now. I don't have everything that I want to have. I don't think I ever will, but I set a goal for myself, and I told myself I was going to do it, and I remind myself every day of it, and I'm still not, you know, I'm still not at my goal. But if I trust in a process and I keep moving forward, then I'm going to achieve all the things I want to achieve.
Hell yeah, man. You've been a great example of that.
Yeah.
So where can people keep up with you? I think it's at Dirty Sanchez something or another.
That's my private account. No, I think what's my Instagram handle is George A. San, I believe. Or add me on Facebook or whatever. I mean,
George A. San. That's George ASAN.
Yeah, George ASAN. That's my Instagram. My email address, if anyone wants to email me, is GEOASAN2@gmail. If you guys got questions or you just want me to look at, I don't know, a cool meme or something, I like to laugh. So
nice. Yeah, you're going to get thousands of those.
Whatever. I mean, it's cool. I'll try to respond to you quickly. Yeah.
Awesome, brother. Thank you so much for your time, bro.
Yeah, of course.
All right. Thanks. Talk to you soon.
Sounds good.